1, 2, 3.
WRFI.
Watkins Glen.
Test.
Ithaca. WRFI Community Radio News is made possible by listeners like you.
Help us tell important stories about your community.
Head to wrfi.org/donate.
This is WRFI Community Radio News, bringing you the news by and for the people of Ithaca and Watkins Glen. It's Friday, July 16th, 2021. I'm Jimmy Jordan. On the show today, we're going to get to know a puppeteer, an uncommon profession that you may wish was a little more popular after meeting the Lily Silly Puppet Theater. But to start things off, you'll hear about the History Center in Tompkins County. They're welcoming the public into their galleries to see a brand new exhibit that opened earlier this month. It's called Breaking Barriers: Women's Lives and Livelihoods. The exhibit explores the lives of women who have lived in Tompkins County, working in public and private spheres across the centuries. It brings some remarkable women from Tompkins County history up onto the stage, front and center. This piece comes to us from WRFI News contributor Esther Rakusin.
The work they did, the energy they put out into their community literally changed the world.
That's the voice of Zoe Van Ostrand. She's talking about the women who lived in Tompkins County over the past centuries and how they contributed to their communities. Van Ostrand works at the History Center of Tompkins County, where there's a new exhibit called Breaking Barriers: Women's Lives and Livelihoods. It opened on July 2nd and will be on display until February 2022. At the Tompkins County History Center, Van Ostrand wears a lot of hats.
In addition to the marketing, social media, web design, and graphic design that I do, I also manage our day-to-day operations in the museum. So I supervise all of our open hours, our visitor interactions, and also create and coordinate our public events. Within this particular exhibit, I have created a series of 15 different events that are happening throughout the length of it. And also, I've been the lead staff coordinator on creating the Women's Voices in Tompkins County Oral History Collection and supervising the volunteer work that has been processing those collections to get them ready for this exhibit as well.
When I spoke to her about the new exhibition, she explained that Breaking Barriers had initially been planned to go on display in June 2020. That was just a couple of months before the 100-year anniversary of the ratification of the 19th Amendment to the Constitution, granting women the right to vote. Then, in March 2020, the COVID pandemic caused the staff of the History Center to delay the opening of the exhibit. With the extra time to plan, all the staff involved in planning the exhibit decided to widen its scope.
So we wanted to re-envision the suffrage centennial to look at the stories that aren't included in the suffrage narrative. And so for that, Breaking Barriers also includes stories of Haudenosaunee women's influence on suffrage, Black female educators and activists and community organizations in Ithaca and Tompkins County, and women working and looking at the ways that it wasn't just the white suffragists that broke barriers in Tompkins County. It was everyday women whose names are not often remembered and shown in exhibits that also changed the culture and structure of our community.
The Breaking Barriers exhibit is made up of six smaller interacting exhibits using source material from the History Center archives, as well as collections from other centers.
We are housing all of them, but we are not the sole creator of these exhibits. The Haudenosaunee Influence on Women's Rights is an exhibit on loan from the Matilda Jocelyn Gage Foundation. The Overlooked History of Women Working is an engaging piece with the History Forge Project, which looks at documenting census records from the 19th century. And so we're looking at the different industries that women were a part of within the community. And Serial Style, The Business of Being Irene Castle, is an exhibit that was a collaboration between the Wharton Studio Museum and the Cornell Fashion and Textile Collection, highlighting silent film star Irene Castle. And then we have two virtual exhibits also, Overcoming Barriers to Vote, Women's Suffrage Movement in Tompkins County, and Sisters of Change, Unsung Sheroes for Racial Justice, Whose Names Everyone Should Know, which was a physical exhibit we did in collaboration with the Dorothy Cotton Institute that is now available in a virtual format on our website for free for local educators to use.
The sixth part of the exhibit consists of recordings from the Women's Voices from the Tompkins County Oral History Collection.
So within the exhibit hall, we have selected clips available. We have we call it the Story Vault. It is a renovated bank vault because we are housed in the former Tompkins Trust Company bank building. So we have selected clips that are available for listening there, but then also all of these interviews can be listened to in full through an appointment booked in our research library, and the transcripts and summaries can be read online.
When local visitors to the Breaking Barriers exhibit look at the different displays, they may recognize some of the women who greatly impacted civil rights. Van Ostrin remarks, though, that out-of-towners might not know them.
And so two of the women that come to mind first, their faces will become quite familiar. Dr. Dorothy Cotton. I had studied the civil rights fairly extensively in college and lived in Georgia and had visited many notable civil rights spaces, but I'd never heard her name. And being the only woman on the executive leadership team with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., it was phenomenal that this wasn't a name that I had heard, that I didn't recognize her impact in running the citizenship education program for 8 years in a really monumental shift-changing time in American history. And then I also think about Connie Cook, who I also had completely missed her name in my history studies, and that she really laid the national groundwork for abortion rights and reproductive rights. And she lived her life in Ithaca. And I'm really excited that we get to, you know, share these local women who lived in this community, who, you know, sang and danced and had dinner parties and went to Cayuga Lake and also had national impacts.
As an English major minoring in history, I've always been interested in the relationship between storytelling and preserving history.
That's Claire Deng. She is a Cornell undergraduate working on the Breaking Barriers exhibit as a summer intern at the History Center. Deng says that the History Center collections reveal that there were also women who lived in Tompkins County that were not well known, but left behind diaries and letters.
One that really comes to mind is Sophronia Bucklin, who was a Civil War nurse from Tompkins County, and she worked on the battlefield at Gettysburg. Treating wounded soldiers from both the Union side and the Confederate side. And she left a lot of her diaries and manuscripts, which we will have on display as part of the exhibit, where she records her experiences at Gettysburg, treating soldiers, becoming friends with them. We also have several letters from soldiers and other Red Cross nurses who were working at the time talking about her and how she was an amazing nurse and friend and mentor in a way. And she, I think the coolest part of her manuscripts is that she has a speech which she gives where she echoes the first line of the Declaration of Independence. It's very similar language. And as a writer, that just makes me really happy to see. From Tompkins County, we know four women who were nurses during the Civil War, but there were probably many more. You know, when we display history, we're always discovering the things that we're missing as well as the things that we have.
Visitors to the exhibit will learn how women who lived in Tompkins County learned from other women who came before them.
So really, you're only looking at a few generations back that the Native women of this region were really teaching and inspiring the white women society on what rights could look like, what equal representation within their community could be. Multiple decades later, after these Indigenous women were inspiring the white suffrage movement, that Dr. Cotton was organizing in the southern states and was teaching classes on how to vote.
The exhibit also presents the words of women who are current leaders in our local communities.
You know, Dr. Nia Nunn, Anna Kells, Leslyn McBean Claiborne, women who are powerful forces within our community today. And we're seeing that they are continuing these efforts to make sure that women's contributions to the community are not put aside or not recognized.
When asked how things have changed for local women over the centuries, Cornell student Claire Deng points out that there are some things that have never changed.
Women have always been working. Women have always been building communities, raising families, being leaders in whatever their spheres are. I think what has changed is the visibility.
The new exhibit is partly supported by funds from quite visible local women-owned businesses.
Breaking Barriers is sponsored by Chloe Capital, which is a women's venture organization that funds different women's programs. And we also have local women-owned businesses that are also supporting the Breaking Barriers exhibit. Adrena Dietra, Hopshire Farm and Brewery, Hound and Mare, Pickleball Mania, and Second Knob Gifts and Antiques are all women-owned businesses across Tompkins County. And these are women that are still breaking barriers within our area.
As the effects of the COVID pandemic lessen in Tompkins County, the public is being invited to visit the History Center and break some barriers.
We were only open for about 6 months in this new space before the pandemic hit. And so we weren't able to kind of do the big rollout of big exhibit changes each year, themed events, becoming a resource for the community. And it's really exciting that this phenomenal exhibit is one of the things that we're able to now share.
To learn more about Breaking Barriers, Women's Lives and Livelihoods, go to thehistorycenter.net/breaking-barriers. For WRFI Community Radio News, I'm Esther Rakusin.
You're listening to WRFI Community Radio News. We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, it will be with Lily Silly Puppet Theater. Stay with us. This is WRFI Community Radio News. I'm Jimmy Jordan, and you're about to meet Lily Silly Puppet Theater. The troupe is composed of the eponymous Lily Gershon and her partner in crime, Matthew O'Cone. If you're a fan of WRFI Community Radio News, you may have heard this piece before. We are re-airing this oldie but goodie. The volunteer team has some great stories in the pipeline, but in the meantime, reacquaint yourself or get to know, for the first time, Lily Silly and Matt O'Cone. This profile comes to us from former news director Michaela Savitt.
Very spacious, sunlit room. Can you tell me a bit about why you structured the house this way?
Me and my friends built this house. We call it the Dacha Project. And it's built kind of like an earthship, if you've ever heard of those, which is a sustainable way of building where you have a lot of glass facing south so that you can get the sun inside your house to warm your house. And so we're in this big room here that's all open. And there's all these windows on the south side, and we can see all the trees and everything. And inside, the sun is coming in and warming up our concrete slab floor and then radiating that heat back out. And I work out of my house, so it's kind of half home and half workshop. And I live with a bunch of roommates, so we've got a lot of baby stuff. We've got our laundry hanging up. We've got our kitchen. And then we have our workshop with all these puppets and scissors and markers and all kinds of fabrics laying all over the place. So that's kind of welcome to my house. This is what it is.
What brought you to the profession of being a puppeteer?
I think it was pretty random because I used to be an English teacher and I had random jobs. Basically, I decided to make a puppet as a gift and I looked up some video of how to make stuff. I'm pretty crafty. I made one puppet. It was really fun. Then I started making little videos with puppets just for my friends at home, just having fun with people. Before I knew it, I had a whole lot of puppets. And then people are like, you have a lot of puppets. You should be doing something with that.
And Matt, where did you come into the picture of this duo? Mm-hmm.
I've been performing as a musician my whole life. I kind of knew how to make money doing it. So that kind of helped us start doing it as a career, because it's not such a stretch if you're already showing up for gigs and performing music. You already have the equipment. You already know the business of it. It's only one more step to bring a puppet theater and do a puppet show.
Backstage here, we have me sitting in a chair in a very tight little box. And then I have some strings that help me control the curtain. I have in front of me what is called the scrim, which is a piece of fabric that is the backdrop, but is a type of fabric that I can see through to see my audience, but the audience can't see me. And then I hang all these puppets back here. I have a little prop box, and this is stuff that I show the children after the show. We always turn the stage around. And we let the kids see everything back here because we think it's important for them to see that they can do it too and encourage future puppeteers. That's basically it. It's me back here with two hands and a lot of puppets.
Do you get a lot of kids asking you, like, can I play with your puppets after the show? Or do you not show your face afterwards?
No, I come out, I turn this whole thing around, I stand here. And I explain everything. I say, here's all the hooks where the puppets are. Here's the box with the props. And I take the puppets out and I say, this is a hand puppet because look, its hands move. And here's a mouth puppet. Its mouth moves. And here's rods on the hands of this one. And I kind of explain it all. And depending on the age of the kid, they might raise their hand and say, and I'll say, does anyone have a question? And they raise their hand. I'm like, you. And they say, I liked it. And I'm like, thank you very much. Does anybody else have a question? You know, but then sometimes I get really good questions. Like, how do you do all the voices?
Can you talk a bit about the process of bringing this amazing theater to other locations?
There's a bunch of stuff that we have to drag from here to there. I think we've gotten it down pretty well, especially with the two of us. Matt's mm-hmm. in charge of the sound stuff. I'm in charge of the puppets and the stage. It's a theater that we built, collapses into three pieces, and we can fit it into the car. And then we have a giant puppet box full of puppets, all the sound equipment, but it sets up pretty small, so we could fit anywhere, and we could fit it in a tiny Prius.
And now that we do it as a career, it kind of limits the types of cars we can buy, because we can only get cars that can fit a puppet theater. Otherwise, we have to kind of redesign all our shows, and it's much more work to create a puppet show than it is to buy a different type of car.
This theater that we're looking at now is our hand puppet theater. But we also do shadow puppets, which is a totally different setup. And Matt custom built several shadow puppet theaters. Now we've gotten one that I think we like. And then we have the cranky theater, which is a big old box with a scroll inside and also all these shadow puppets and the lights. And sometimes we have traveled with two separate kinds of theaters in one car, and that's been a whole fun game, Tetris style. Luckily, I'm really good at Tetris. One big thing for us is that our shows are interactive. The puppets can hear the kids and sometimes ask the kids stuff. Like I tell them, puppets can hear you. If you think that they should know something, feel free to talk to them. So that way we can also learn the kids' responses and keep it fresh, even for us, because we've been doing this show now 5 years or something. And it's always fresh because you never know what the kids are going to do. So we have to improv it and be like, okay, they're extra rowdy. Let's calm it down a little, or or they need a little more pizzazz. Let's have the witch be a little extra naughty or something like
that. Do you and Lily have some sort of like signal while that's going on, or you just both know to like, all right, let's do it. Let's take it up a notch.
Lily and I both kind of know as the show's going on how to manage that. The craziest shows are where there's a lot of kids and no adults. In our show, there's a witch. She's not really bad, but she does things that she's not supposed to do. And we've had kids get so angry at the witch that they've ran to the stage and punched the puppet, which is dangerous because Lily's hand is in there, you know? And then we did an outdoor show once where the children started ripping out grass and throwing it at the witch. So we had to learn how to strike a balance between getting the children excited about the show and being too mellow and having them not pay attention.
I like when the kids get to like yell or express themselves, because a lot of times, you know, in schools, everyone's like, be quiet. But in my show, it's like they have to yell at the sloth to wake it up. But I like that aspect of it, that they get to kind of express themselves.
The first thing that came to my mind is like the cartoons where they're like throwing rotten tomatoes. The kids' version of that. I would love to hear about a time where you've gotten a reaction to one of your shows that was unexpected or surprising.
I was at a school once and I didn't have my theater, but the teacher was like, oh, they really want to see the puppets. Can you just show it to them anyway? And I was like, well, I don't have my theater. I'm right here. They can see me. They can see my lips moving. They can see my hands. And I just took out the puppets and started doing some stuff. And the kids didn't care at all that I was there, that they could see that I'm talking for the puppet, that they could see my hand in the puppet. It didn't matter. It was like they were talking to the puppet. I wasn't even there. You know, it just didn't matter. And I realized, oh, yeah, the magic is in the fact that we all can't help but see something as alive if it's acting like it's alive. And I don't need to actually be hidden in any way. That's happened like after a show, a kid will come up and they're like, I want to speak to the witch. And I'm like, okay. So I put the witch on and I'm standing right there, you know, with the witch. They can see I just put her on my hand, but it doesn't matter. They'll be talking to the witch. Why were you so bad? Why did you do this thing? And I'm just like answering as the witch. I'm like, well, I'm not really, I'm sorry. You know, whatever it is. And they're just talking to her, and the parents will come by and the little kid will be like, I'm talking to the witch. And I'm standing there. So it doesn't matter. And I think that showed me like how much magic there is in puppetry.
Isn't that sometimes uncomfortable when it's like you and the puppet standing there? Like, are you just totally in the moment? Or is it like, I'm Lily and here's the puppet?
When I'm moving my hand in the puppet, I just am that character in that moment. And sometimes I'll talk to myself, but there's a distinction between the character and me. And if that puppet already has a character, if I've developed it, then it's just feels really natural. It's like, oh, that's what that person would say. I wouldn't say that. You know, or I feel like this, but that's how that character feels. And I can't do anything about that. It helps because I really like children and I really feel like I understand them, like I get their world. So I don't feel like uncomfortable being there and being myself, but also being this character. It just feels really natural.
In addition to the kids going home and trying to recreate the shows on their own, what other kind of feedback do you get post-show, maybe from the kids or their parents?
Kids, yeah, they're very open and honest. So they're very quick to just come up and say, I liked it. Or like, you did a good job, they say sometimes. Mm-hmm. Or they'll just pick a character and they'll say like, I like Mr. Blue or I like the kitty or whatever. Yeah, there's some bits that we know parents like a lot more. Like there's the bits where we see that the parents kind of perk up. So they might come up and say that they like those parts.
What parts are those?
Mr. Blue and his radio. That's our big adult winner.
That's a act from our show, which, what is this called in theater? Breaking the fourth wall. Yeah, a bit of meta puppet commentary in the middle of the kids' show, which is always fun, and I think the parents don't expect it.
Hey, yeah, I know, it's me, the witch. Ah, did you hear Aunt Irene? She said there's no such thing as a witch. I've never seen a witch. What about me? I'm a witch. Ah, oh, so frustrating. Oh, what's this thing? A radio? I know. I'll put a spell on it. Yeah. Then Aunt Irene will know I'm real. Let's see. Owl's eye. Bat's wing. curse this radio to do a crazy thing.
Oh, Mr. Blue.
Is my radio out there?
Yes, it is, Mr. Blue. It's out there. Go on out there.
Hello. I'm Mr. Blue, and this is my radio. I just love the radio. And, how does it work? Well, it has these dials, and when you turn it on, it plays music and news. Here, let me turn it on. Oh, this one makes me want to dance. Oh, but there's different stations, too. Here, let me try it. Well, that's a different kind of music, but there's more. Let me try. Here's one. Oh, my favorite, classical. But there's more, too. I know. Let's try the news. Let's see here.
Welcome to Puppet News Flash.
See, it's Puppet News.
Yes, today in Puppet Science, we now know what lies behind a puppet's fuzzy exterior.
Huh?
Yes, we now know that behind a puppet's fuzzy exterior lies one naked human elbow.
Oh, that's the funniest thing I ever heard. Must be a comedy.
This is not a comedy.
Huh?
If you're a puppet, you can find out for yourself by following these easy steps.
Easy steps?
Yes. Step number one, raise your left hand.
Okay.
Step number two, place it on your belly.
All right.
Step number three, grab that fuzzy exterior and lift.
What was that?
It was an elbow.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was. Well, if you're not sure, why don't you try it again?
Oh, no, I don't think I should.
Come on, aren't you curious? Was there an elbow back there? Raise your left hand.
All right.
Now place it on your belly.
Okay.
Now grab that fuzzy exterior and lift.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, in fact, news confirms that connected to this elbow lies an entire human being who is always right behind you.
There's nobody there.
Well, of course, you can't see him because there's a curtain.
A curtain?
All you have to do to find out for yourself is lift that curtain.
Oh, no, I couldn't do that.
Come on, aren't you curious? Is there somebody back there? All you have to do is lift that curtain.
Never happened before. I'm gonna turn off this radio.
You can turn it off. You can turn it off.
I won't turn off.
What are you gonna do now?
Maybe that's enough radio for now.
This is WRFI Community Radio News. That was Lily Silly Puppet Theater, and that will do it for our program today. If you want to hear more news from your community, we have tons of stories and content on WRFI's webpage. That's WRFI.org. Have a nice night, everyone.
One, two, three.
WRFI.